Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 87 for April 15th, 2007. Coming up in a few minutes, part two of my roundup on new whiskeys coming out this spring. First, though, let's take a look at the news. Ardbeg is coming out with a big new bottling, literally. The Ardbeg Committee's spring report hit the mails this past week. And to celebrate the 10th anniversary of Ardbeg's revival, the distillery is releasing a limited edition of what it's calling Ardbeg More. It's the basic 10-year-old Ardbeg, but bottled at a cask strength 57.3% ABV in 4.5-liter bottles. That's about 6.5 regular 700-milliliter bottles. Think of it as the party-size Ardbeg. Ardbeg More makes its debut at Fay's Isle, the Isle of Festival of Malt and Music, in June at £350 a bottle. There's the Speyside Whiskey Trail, and now Ardbeg and the other distillers on the West Coast have followed suit. It's one of those instances where distillers large and small have joined together to help boost tourism, along with hotels, golf courses, tour operators, and funding from Scottish tourism authorities. The Whiskey Coast includes 16 distilleries stretching from Springbank in Campbelltown to Islay and up the coastline to Talisker on the Isle of Skye. The goal, to get you to visit Scotland's west coast, and if you're listening to this, you probably either have already or you want to anyway. There's a link to the new Whiskey Coast website at whiskeycast.com. On the business side, India used up its one and only chance to block World Trade Organization sanctions on its tariffs on imported spirits. As I've reported here before, the European Union asked the WTO to rule that India's tariff structure violates free trade standards, and the U.S. joined in that effort. A WTO dispute panel was set to hear the case, but this past week, Indian officials were able to get the hearing blocked on the grounds that they're still trying to negotiate a settlement. The WTO rules only allow that tactic once, and the delay only lasts for 2 weeks. A ruling from the WTO could take up to a year. Coming up on the calendar of events, the Whiskey Fair in Limburg, Germany is this coming weekend, along with the Whiskey Festival in Thessaloniki, Greece, and the charity event I've mentioned a few times in nearby Lumberton, New Jersey, where there'll be a Scotch tasting with Scott's Selections on Saturday the 21st to benefit the American Cancer Society. Tickets are still available. Check the WhiskeyCast website for more. Later in the month, the Park East Grill in New York City holds a Scotch tasting and dinner, and the Kentucky Bourbon Festival's Spring Sampler takes place in Bardstown. Of course, the Spirit of Speyside Festival takes place May 3rd through the 7th in Dufton, and Fay's Isle runs from May 26th through June 3rd on Islay. You'll find a complete list of whiskey festivals and events on the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. Last time around, we heard from a few of the distillers showing off their new whiskeys at Whiskey Live New York, and there really was more than just one episode could handle, so let's look at some of the other whiskeys coming down the pike. You'll have to go to Orkney to get the next Ambassador bottling from Highland Park. Jerry Tosh picked it out himself.
Mark, the new Ambassador selection, we have a new 1974 cask that will come out in 35cl bottles, which will be released only at the distillery, so you have to go to the distillery to do it, which is a journey in itself. And it has a wonderful refill sherry butt, so it has this wonderful sort of sweetness going right the way through the whiskey, and it's a classic Highland Park flavour.
By the way, the hints I reported last November after talking with distillery manager Russell Anderson are looking more and more like reality. There may be the first distillery bottling of a 40-year-old Highland Park available in time for the holidays. The 1991 Glenrothes vintage was one of my favorites, but sadly it's gone now, replaced by the equally good 1992. The flagship bottling from Glenrothes remains the 1972 vintage, but Ronnie Cox says there's another older bottling available now.
We've got the 1975, which is the last of the 1970s that we've got, so getting increasingly rare, unfortunately. But the 1975 came out in November this year. We've got a 1994, which is a younger expression, a fresher expression. And then we've got one or two other ones up our sleeves, which we can't really talk about.
It's not later this year?
Well, possibly later this year, Mark. We might have another word.
When there's something to report, I'll have the details here on WhiskeyCast. A couple of weeks ago, I reported that Diageo was adding a third single malt to its new Singleton series. The Singleton of Glendullen made its debut at Whiskey Live New York, with Master Distiller Emeritus Evan Katnach doing the pouring.
It's absolutely beautiful, really, because you get a lot of fruity notes coming from it. It's a lot of raisins and citrus, and it's really nice and smooth. It's a wonderful product coming from, you know, from Dufton itself, really. It's Dufton's marvellous, because they always say that Rome was built in seven hills and Dufton was built in seven stills, and this is one of them.
And we've not gotten Glendullen in the States much at all, have we?
I don't think it's ever been in the States at all. I've never seen it, and I've been coming here since 1985. Really, there might have been some independent bottlers, but I haven't seen it at all.
Tell me also about, because I know this is sort of really becoming a brand for the malts range with the Glenord, I believe, in Asia, and the Singleton of Dufton in Europe. Is this really, what's the goal here?
It's just when they've called it the Singleton range, really, because they are single whiskies, and it's just sort of differentiate from the classic malts and from the rare malts. It's all these single ones. There's just little experiments coming through of great whiskies that have been lying in Scotland there, and nobody has ever tried them at all. So when you find, okay, the old Muir of Ord was out, but the Singleton of Ord, it was different too. And the Singleton of Dufton, although Dufton has been bottled by independent bottlers, but never as the Singleton. So it's this complete range of its own, really.
Again, Asian markets get the Singleton of Glenord, and European markets have the Singleton of Dufton. Last week we heard from Jim Rutledge about his plans to make Four Roses bourbon more widely available in the U.S. But the most unknown whiskey of the night is even harder to find. You might not think of Iowa as a whiskey-producing state, but apparently, the farmers also had a knack for making whiskey during the dark days of Prohibition. Keith Karkoff brought Templeton Rye out of bootleggers' lore.
It was a very well-kept secret years ago during Prohibition. Very few families had the recipe, and a lot of the area farmers, the community of 350, were the ones that had to figure out another way of making a living because of the Depression. There was a lot of money was tight, and they turned to that, and my grandpa happened to be one of them. And I asked my father for years, I said, are we ever going to have this recipe shared? And he said, I don't think it's something that we need to know about, but eventually it was. And then Scott Bush, who's the president of the company, came up with the idea of trying to make this Prohibition whiskey legal, and it's been a very good success since then.
Tell me about the story behind Templeton Rye.
The story behind Templeton Rye is the local community of, like Templeton, Iowa, a community of 350 people. Word got out to Chicago that it was a very good whiskey, and supposedly Al Capone was a customer for some of them people, and he called it the good stuff, and he was a very good plus for those people back then.
And this is all made in Iowa, which is not normally thought of as whiskey country, right?
No, it's not. I think we're right now one of two distilleries in Iowa. There's one in Cedar Rapids, and then we have one in Templeton, Iowa.
What makes this whiskey so unique other than the fact that it's made in Iowa?
Oh, I think this has a lot of charisma behind it because of the stories and so forth, and how people hid the whiskey, hid the mash, hid the stills and so forth, and it just enters the whole picture of a very unique whiskey.
How far is this marketed? Where are you marketing it right now?
Right now we're in Iowa because of availability of product, being a new company and so forth, but we plan to expand to Chicago this fall, and we'll see how it carries us from there. We're going to check that market out first.
And it seems like you've really caught sort of a wave here, because I know that rye whiskey is becoming really popular in America once again.
That seems to be the thing nowadays. It's a very limited product as far as rye whiskey availability. You know, there's a very limited distilleries that actually make rye whiskey. But from what we've heard from people in the field, it's a product that's up and coming.
If you're in the Midwestern United States, it might be worth tracking down a bottle of Templeton Rye. I tried it, and to be honest, it's one of the smoothest rye whiskeys I've ever tasted. Next time around, we'll hear from the man who really gets credit for starting the renaissance of rye whiskey. Julian Van Winkle also makes some of the best bourbons around.
I mean, I've noticed in the last 2 or 3 years, the hard work that we've done as far as just sampling people on our whiskey and getting them to try it, it's the acceptance that we've found that people really notice the difference in our whiskey than other ones out there.
That's Julian Van Winkle, and you'll hear the entire interview with him on the next episode of Whiskey Cast. That's all for this episode. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com, and I'd love to hear from you. Whiskey Cast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2007, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.